What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardwar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lo.
This week, all eyes are on TikTok, or I guess the entire government is aligned to get TikTok out of the U.S. or at least sold to another company. We're going to be talking about everything happening around that. So the House just passed a bill that would give ByteDance 6 months to sell TikTok. If they don't do that, TikTok will be banned from U.S. app stores. We're going to bring on Carissa Bell from Engadget to dive into all of that. This is something we've been talking about for years, but it actually seems like it's happening now. So that's pretty wild. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. So let's dive into the latest battle between the U.S. government and TikTok. Joining us for this discussion is Senior Editor Carissa Bell. Carissa, how's it going?
Hey, pretty good.
Well, another busy week for you, Carissa. I feel like every time we talk to you, you're like, you're just following like what the government is doing or what politicians are doing at the latest minute. I feel like this is such a great beat for you. Can you basically update us? What just happened this week between the House and the fight against TikTok?
Yeah, so there was a new bill that kind of came out of nowhere. It's called the Protecting Americans from Foreign Adversary Controlled Applications Act.
Really rolls off the tongue.
They really nailed it with the name. And basically, if it passes into law, it gives ByteDance, the parent company of TikTok, 6 months to sell the app or else it will be banned in the United States.
Okay. It's weird how this happened so quickly. Like, do we have a sense of like what happened here? Because right now, the two sides of our government, right? The two sides of Congress just have been having a lot of trouble deciding on anything altogether. Like, there's very little bipartisan legislation happening right now. But all of a sudden, Democrats and Republicans are like, yes, TikTok bad. Let's ban TikTok for some reason. Carissa, do you have a sense of like what's going on and why this came on so quickly?
Yeah, I mean, it's like gotten overwhelming support, which, you know, if you know this Congress, that doesn't happen very often. Yeah, you know, I think there's been some interesting reporting about this. I think it's kind of taken a lot of people by surprise, including TikTok themselves. And, you know, from what we know from some of the political outlets is, you know, I think that there was sort of a, you know, TikTok calls it like a secret effort, but there's certainly a quiet effort to kind of craft a bill like this. And I believe that there were officials from the Biden administration that also kind of advised on writing the bill in a way that they thought, you know, might make it more able to stand up to potential legal challenges, stuff like that. But, you know, it kind of just came out of nowhere, was introduced last week, and it cleared committee in a unanimous vote like 2 days later, and then went to the House floor yesterday.
can we talk about the why of it, Carissa? Because I feel like you have a sense here. We've been hearing for years now, and honestly, since the Trump administration, like since he wanted to just like ban TikTok because he was so mad at it for some reason, I've read that there are potential security concerns because this is a major social network that's on hundreds of millions of phones in the U.S. People seem to be concerned that it is a company that is ultimately working at the behest of the Chinese government, right? Like, that's how every major Chinese company works. Is that the main thing? Are they worried about actual hacking already happening? Or is this all about fears of what could happen?
I mean, I think it's all of the above. You know, on one level, a lot of it, I want to say is, you know, maybe not optics is the right word,
right,
but certainly, you know, it's a Chinese company, as folks in Congress like to always say. They think, you know, a lot of them kind of push this idea that like the Chinese Communist Party, you know, could exercise sort of undue influence over TikTok and like manipulate its algorithm or force them to give them user data. What we know is TikTok says, you know, that's never happened. Even if they tried to do that, it wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't do it. They wouldn't comply.
Also, TikTok's kind of data is stored in the U.S. now after the last fight, right?
It is, yes. You know, there have also been cases, you know, a few particular cases where it was found out that, you know, ByteDance employees were, you know, looking into the accounts of specific journalists, for example, that were, you know, doing some unflattering reporting on the company. And, you know, TikTok came out against that. They said that those employees got fired. You know, they've tried to say that was kind of like a one-off sort of thing. And then, you know, I think the kind of broader concern that a lot of national security officials have raised is, you know, TikTok gets a lot of data about its users, you know, their location, what they're looking at, you know, all kinds of personal information that these apps collect. And, you know, they worry that if that data could somehow flow to China, to Chinese officials, that somehow they could like use that in a nefarious way to like advance their, you know, geopolitical aims. Well, that's a much bigger problem than just TikTok.
I mean, we've talked about a lot of this stuff before, especially when you've come on, Krista, that everything the government is pointing to that TikTok is doing is something every single frickin' social network is guilty of at this point in terms of tracking user data, in terms of doing inappropriate things with user data, undue influence, like influencing kids and kids' attitudes. Like there were even Facebook's own reporting found that they were negatively impacting teenagers, right? And by highlighting suicidal content and things like that. So what is the difference between what Facebook and Instagram and everybody else is doing and what TikTok is doing? Is it really just the because it's from China part of it that seems to be freaking people out, Carissa?
I mean, yes.
That's there it. Are, that's I mean, it. Yeah.
I mean, there are people in Congress who actually care about the data access issue and they want to, you know, pass kind of comprehensive privacy legislation. But so far, those efforts have gotten nowhere. But, you know, kind of China bad, TikTok bad, you know, has that sort of point of view has, you know, found a lot more support.
Yeah. TikTok itself has responded. The CEO, Shou Chu, also put up a response video yesterday, saying that it's a violation of First Amendment rights and things like that. Like, so I also saw reporting at the New York Times that TikTok has sent influencers, has basically paid for influencers to go to the Capitol and to Congress and to protest and also to be very vocal about what's happening here and to whip up their followers. TikTok also did an push update to users in the U.S. saying, hey, call your congressman about this thing that's happening, which not a great look. But also, you know who else did that? Uber, Lyft, like so many other apps that we use and rely on have done this to like influence, you know, how politicians think of them too. But again, it's because, oh my God, this Chinese app sent a push notification to everybody. What are we going to do about it? I'm just like, where do you come down on this ultimately, Sherlyn? Because I know you have thoughts about TikTok overall.
Yeah. And we talked a little bit about this before we got into this episode, Devendra, which is I have less of the concerns around the data access thing, in part because it's hard to prove so far. I will say, I look at other Chinese companies that have really grown like in popularity recently, like Temu. Temu is the classic example, one of those companies that like out of nowhere, they had Super Bowl ads and then just had ridiculous price. They were like spamming all your Instagram ads and they just really insidiously took over. And then you see people talking about Temu now. Because like for me, I never wanted to use Temu. I was very much like, no, the way they've come up is way too suspicious.
That's weird. But that's weird, yo. Yeah.
It is very weird. And then I heard about other people buying stuff from them. I'm starting to see people, you know, order stuff from them. I see packages in my lobby, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm realizing that people are just buying the, you know, they don't really care so much that Temu is a Chinese company. They care that it's cheap, right?
It's
and then
cheap,
you see all the like online discussion over, you know, Amazon goods versus Temu goods. And like the same thing can cost a lot less on Temu, whatever. But then you don't consider the fact that Amazon's a bit more of a trusted company. You can refund more easily. You can, you know,
that and most sort of importantly, stuff. It's a US company. So
also that.
Yeah.
So do I think Temu's out here to get your data? No. But do you know what I think is happening? And I this is me putting on my like conspiracy theory hat. China is influencing America in a lot of ways that you might not be aware of, right? TikTok's one of the ways. TikTok, I'm less, like I said, nervous about the data access and more about the ease with which they could push propaganda if they wanted to. They are on all our phones. They have control over all the algorithms. If they wanted to send one message, they could just tweak the algorithm and
they
have
could.
Everyone
sure.
look at this one video, right? So that's one thing. The other is the competing against Amazon. They're undermining the competition. If they did steal customers from Amazon, which I don't think they're going to, then they're like, you know, weakening one of your biggest companies. The other thing when that's linked to the propaganda issue here, look at all the like Chinese companies and names in your film industry. Look at all the movies that are made just because China threw some money at it, and it's like you have to hire this and that, like, Chinese actress.
All of a sudden, there are more Chinese actors in Hollywood productions.
Tencent is in so many things. Don't even talk about the gaming and mobile gaming industry. Look at Tencent's name in all your films. This is just the things that have like crept up over the years that people aren't really paying attention to, that I feel is the larger issue here. And I feel a TikTok ban might not solve it, but it's at least raising awareness. And
I mean, sure,
I think that's
sure.
where the fear comes from.
But that's so many things. You're pulling up so many things, Sherlyn. You're right. Like, there's a lot of like money from China going into Hollywood, going to all sorts of things in games, and also real estate. That's a whole thing. Like, there are so many things going on. We have also talked about the cybersecurity concerns around China because. Openly, the U.S. government is like, yeah, China is attacking us. Like, the government's attacking us. It's been tied to groups hacking into companies and hacking into, like, I think even government offices after a certain point. So, like, there are those concerns there. But I'm talking specifically about social media. It sure seems like if we have all these concerns about what China is doing and about what the power of TikTok is, it almost seems like the better solution would be, like you were mentioning, Krista, the people talking about an overall data privacy bill that could protect kids no matter using which app they're using and protect our data and maybe open up the transparency of algorithms to see how things are actually working. It feels like that would be where our energy is better spent, but that would not be good for YouTube or Facebook or everything, right? Like, is from your sense, Krista, would that be more effective? But is there a reason we're not seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. The reality is that China can get the data, that kind of data, without TikTok. You know, we already know, government officials have talked about the problem of data brokers selling large caches of Americans' personal data, you know, sometimes really sensitive personal data, to China, to other countries, because we don't have any laws regulating data brokers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they already have a lot of this information, and you can ban TikTok, but you wouldn't claw any of that back, what they have. You wouldn't stop them from getting, you know, data from other sources. So, yeah, I mean, I think if you really care about privacy and kind of locking down our data and protecting people in that way, you need something more comprehensive. Like you said, privacy laws, strict regulations and enforcement for the data broker industry. You know, maybe some, like you mentioned, algorithmic transparency. Then there's been a lot of attempts to kind of bring legislation forward. But I think the thing is that it's just, you know, it's so hard to, these bills have not managed to get enough support to really pass committee. There's so many tech regulation bills, you know, and a lot of them do have, a good amount of support. There was a child safety hearing fairly recently, there's lots of bills mentioned, but, you know, there's just so many roadblocks. It's so much harder for, you know, these lawmakers to agree on, you know, kind of the nuances. How do you do this?
You can't point to a country and say, like, it's this country's fault, right?
Right.
That's the ultimate thing. We have seen commentary from researchers and activists too. I'm reading from our post here. In a letter to lawmakers, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, the EFF, the American Civil Liberties Union, the ACLU, Fight for the Future, and the Center for Democracy and Technology have all argued that the bill would, quote, set an alarming global precedent for excessive government control over social media platforms, end quote, and they'd likely invite copycat measures by other countries with significant consequences for free expression globally. So that is the other thing, too, like, listen, a lot. China already has the internet already restricted for a lot of its users, right? People cannot get access to the full breadth of the internet or Google or everything. But would other companies start to react to this too? If we are starting to block TikTok, would people start to just block Facebook or Meta from some things as well? That could be a potential other issue. But I feel like that's like an aside. That's not like the core potential harm here. For me, it's just like, it's really weird. We just want to kill one app, man. Yeah, especially when, like, there's not one thing you can point to be like, hey, this app is actively harming us. Whereas Facebook itself proved it was actively harming us and we did nothing to them, basically. Facebook, you know, Meta, we've slapped fines on these companies, but that's pretty much it. There's no, like, nationwide ban of anything. Anyway, this seems like it's going to be an ongoing story. What is next in this, for this
saga
to actually happen, Carissa?
Yeah, so the bill is going to go to the Senate now. I think there's still a lot of questions about whether it can actually get enough support to pass the Senate. I believe it will need 60 votes there's already been several senators who, you know, have suggested that they don't want to support that bill. I think Rand Paul said he wants to block it if he can. So we'll see what happens. If it does pass the Senate, Biden has said he'll sign it. But I suspect it will, you know, take a while to actually, I don't think it's going to get rushed through the Senate the way that it did in the House. I think it's going to take a while.
Also interesting that even Trump is saying now that he thinks it would be a bad idea to ban TikTok because it would embolden Meta and Facebook and Zuckerschmuck is, I believe, what he called him. that's according to the post on True Social, always with the names, always with the very, very smart sounding, not third grade name calling names. But it does seem like that will be a much bigger fight. And yeah, we'll be paying attention to it. I do wonder, I've talked to influencers, I've talked to people who have managed to build basically a following on TikTok and earn money from it, just like people have on YouTube and stuff. It also seems really weird that the government could just be like, hey, this thing that you've kind of centered your life around and has been paying you, we don't like it right now. So therefore, bye-bye to your livelihood. To me, that's also a potential problem. I don't know. I feel like the precedent is not great. I want to point people to a lot of great reporting around this stuff. 404 Media, which I love, has a great editorial saying the U.S. wants to ban TikTok for the sins of every social media company by Jason Kobler. Great piece. Great, nice. Great piece. Worth reading. And I think that
great
is
headline.
True. Great headline. Mm. And it really is that we are so mad at social media and what social media has done to us and how it's influencing kids. But good God, it is happening everywhere. And I think to a certain degree, like TikTok has been better than Meta and Facebook than from hiding some of the actual harms it's doing to people. So I don't know. This is such a messy story. But you know what, listeners? Let us know what you think. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Chrisabel, where can people find you online these days?
They can find me still on Twitter, or X, I guess now it's called, Carissa BE. I'm also a lot more active on Threads and Blue Sky lately. Same handle.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Carissa.
Thank you.
In other news, it looks like event season is whipping back up again. We got the news at Microsoft. Yeah, weirdly. Microsoft is going to be holding a Surface and AI event on March 21st. At least that was the initial news. Now I'm hearing from Microsoft. I'm hearing from like a couple different people that this may not be like a huge consumer PC event. This may be more enterprise focused. I believe it's tied to their Ignite conference. But hey, Microsoft is doing a thing. They're going to broadcast stuff. We're going to hear more about their AI and Surface products. Maybe not as much as we expected. What do you think about this, Sherlyn? Are you excited to hear what Microsoft has cooking at this point?
I think I was part of the people that were like confused at the start. We were like, oh, yes. Surface, new Surfaces. And I was like, isn't it a little early in the year for new Surfaces? Didn't they just lose Panos? But now that we have a bit of a reframing of the event, I guess I'm not super excited for it. I've got Copilot fatigue. I think if you look at the website for the event itself, it's a digital event on March 21st, right? It says, tune in here for the latest in scaling AI in your environment with Copilot, Windows, and Surface. And I think we all jumped to the Copilot, Windows, and Surface and glossed over is the latest in scaling AI in your environment. It doesn't sound like something I personally would use on a daily basis. So I very mid right now. That's where my feelings are at.
I mean, listen, I've been testing Copilot for a bit and I've not been super impressed. I've been paying for the Copilot Pro thing just to see how that is going. And some of my responses are a little faster. You know, some of the queries are a little faster. The image generation is better. But man, it is not changing my life. It is not worth $20 a month. I spend $20 a month on things I use all the time, you know, and it kills me. All the streaming services I use and I don't watch enough of, to me, that is more worth it than what I'm getting from Copilot. And I think that's the story we're hearing from some companies too. I'm hearing from people at certain big companies that are trying to move over to Microsoft Teams and lean into Copilot stuff that people just don't want to use it. It is this brand new thing and it's really hard to encourage people to do it, but companies will be paying per chair, you know, $20 to $30 per chair for people to use Copilot. I don't know if that's going to be worth it for a lot of people. That's an office license. That's what an office license used to cost monthly, you know?
Yeah. Instead of bundling it into your existing and offering it for free, because this is still, in my opinion, kind of a half-baked product. It's not, well, not half-baked, maybe three-quarters baked. And like, they're already so eager to make money off of this that they're selling these things without a fully, you know, ready product. I'm just like, yes, when it was novel and everyone was excited to try it out, like ChatGPT in the early days, I see why you would make it, you know, a gated entry with some like fees, right? But now it's like, if I don't use yours, Microsoft, I'm gonna just jump over to bard.google.com, or I'm gonna jump over
to... You mean Gemini?
I know. But that was the URL I remember as the free.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know what I mean? Like, there are free options out there for us to play with. You gotta be really serving something.
I think they've just been so desperate. This is what we've been talking about last year, right? Like, Microsoft was so quick to bring Copilot everywhere, and Google's like, oh shit, Bard.
Exactly.
Whip it, like, but get it faster. Yeah.
I do think Google always had like a more fleshed out product, because, or its own expertise, at least.
Google has its own expertise. I think that much is clear because they have been working on this stuff forever, and we've talked about that. Like, Google has been working on AI algorithms. Like, some part of ChatGPT is from Google's own research, and like, the idea of making it a product, that's where a lot of people have been hesitant. And that's where Microsoft was just like, hey, look at what OpenAI has. We're going all in on this.
And to be clear, like, we talk about AI like this new gen AI is relatively new, but AI has been around, right? So like, if you look at what Google has done in the past with its AI-based features like Smart Compose, Smart Reply, Suggestions, right? Those it just kind of baked into its products for free. It didn't charge you a per seat AI fee to use Smart Reply because it knew probably that people won't pay for these sorts of things. So
I think they also didn't know how to productize it too. So I feel like that's been like part of the thing. What do you think about Surface devices, by the way? Because we also talked about last summer or last fall when I came to New York for the Surface AI event, where we didn't get to see a new Surface Pro. We didn't get to see a new Surface laptop. And I found a lot of that a little disappointing. Are you at all ready for new Surfaces? Do you think Microsoft can make a big impact? Because we've been hearing that these will be the debut of the AI PC Surfaces, which is also confusing on another level, but I'll get into that. Are you excited about the new thing, Sherlyn?
I think I'm less excited and more curious as to what this means for Microsoft's hardware direction moving forward, and wonder if it's why Panos may have left, because it looks like they're just trying to be less consumer focused and more, we will shop with... We will shop directly to businesses now. You know, we'll make these Surface devices just for enterprises. And so if that's the case, then that's where my mind's at. Rather than like AI PCs are the new thing, I'm not really that keen.
I don't know if that's really the thing, but we did see something last fall that was interesting, is that the new Surface Go, the tiny little hybrid tablet, I think it was the Surface Go 4, that one never got a consumer release, and they didn't even talk about it during the event. It was just like quietly, hey, has new hardware, it's available for businesses. You could still buy it as a consumer, but they are marketing and gearing it towards businesses. I don't know if the same thing's going to be true about the Surface Pro, right? Like, that is the Surface Pro is like their flagship baby. That's like the thing proving that Microsoft could make a computer differently than Apple. And I think it's the thing that also design-wise pushed a lot of the PC industry to try these hybrid tablets. My thing is, I just don't think people want these things anymore, because the dream was Windows would eventually be upgraded to be better in like a touchscreen tablet environment. And they just never did that. You know, like, after Windows 8, we got Windows 10. And then I like Windows 10 quite a bit. But Windows 10 and Windows 11 have not done much to really optimize the touchscreen experience. They're a little better.
Exactly.
They're still like fundamentally, you're using a keyboard and trackpad or mouse. You know, they're really old school desktop things. It's not like using iPad OS or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's and it ties into that whole thing we, I think, talked about last week, where Android apps are going away from the Windows ecosystem, you know? Yeah. Duh. I don't think
the thing everybody loved and used. Yeah. So I don't know what we're expecting eventually. It may be next week. It may be later on at the Microsoft Build event. But we're going to see new Surfaces with Intel chips that have the MPUs in them. That is what Intel and AMD are marketing as AI PCs right now. I want to be clear, this would not be the first quote-unquote AI PC Surface, because the Surface Pro 9 with 5G that I reviewed last year had the Qualcomm chip, which had an MPU. So that's where it got really confusing. So
did it have a Copilot key though?
Copilot didn't exist back then. Or at least Copilot now there's also Copilot key, which is replacing the like right side function key at the bottom of your keyboard. Also totally useless. But that was such a weird release because it was a slower chip. It was also running the Windows on ARM setup, so it was incompatible with a lot of older apps. But it ran like Windows Studio FX because it had the MPU. And the Intel-based Surface Pro 9 could not do that. So anyway, I think I had a good headline when I reviewed the 5G. It was like Pro in name only because it was so slow and just didn't work as well as an Intel computer. So sure, these will be the first x86-based surfaces with MPUs. Right. And they'll have Windows Studio FX. They may work better with Adobe software and some other software that's using this stuff. I don't think anybody has like fully tapped into what an MPU can do either. So I don't know how that's going to excite people. But that's the thing. I think people will be down for that. I want to ask our listeners, actually, like, are you all still excited about Surfaces? Because I do remember when the first Surface came out, I reviewed that thing. It was a mess. But the vision of what Microsoft was selling was really interesting. And now we are more than 10 years on, like we are a ways into this whole family line. The Surface Pro kind of looks the same. It's still pretty powerful for how thin it is. The Surface laptop is just a laptop. Are you excited at all about anything else Microsoft is doing? We did get the Surface Laptop Studio in the fall, which is their like high-end one that can tilt the screen forward. I also don't know if people are actually buying that because that machine had some problems. So Microsoft is just in a weird place. And yeah, I think we can see the writing on the wall, like why Panos may have decided to move over to Amazon. Maybe also I would just wager like Microsoft is looking at this whole division where it has spent billions of dollars in like design and R&D and everything. And Surface has been making money, but not a ton. Like it took a while for it to start turning a profit. It's not like a leading, PC maker at this point. So I think Microsoft is just in a weird place. Like, are they just going to tread water with Surface for now? Kind of like what they're doing with Xbox. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Surface tablet still has a place, but with the laptops, even though I really love the Surface laptops, I think they struggle to differentiate from everyone out there like Dell and HP and so on.
For sure. I think the real challenge is like, listen, whenever I look over at the MacBook Air, like the MacBook Air M2, and I'm looking at the MacBook Air M3, I'm like, oh, you beautiful. You beautiful beast. You're so thin. You're so fast. You don't
it
have a
is.
Fan. You,
Gosh,
you do everything. Yeah. And there's a reason I've been giving it high reviews. And then I look at the Surface and I'm like, it's like the meme where you hear the Jurassic Park theme song and like, crummy music or something. Like it's just not as good. It's not as good, even though the Surface hardware is still pretty impressive for what it is. The Windows experience is not as good, I'd say. So anyway, we will be following up with that. And actually, I think we're going to release the podcast maybe a little later next week so we can record after the Surface event. Just so we're like fully in the know with all this stuff. So stay tuned for more on this. We also saw the news this week that Apple is going to allow iOS apps to be distributed on websites in the EU. That follows the stuff we were talking about last week where additional app stores were going to be opened up.
It was like third-party app stores.
Yeah, third-party app stores. So hey, for some developers, they can link directly to apps from the web. Any thoughts on this, Sherlyn?
I am still kind of trying to understand how it will work because you're not downloading an APK. You're like clicking a link that will take you to the whatever store that you've installed.
I don't think we fully know how it's going to work.
Yeah.
I'm going to read from our report here.
Clear.
Yeah. Web distribution option, which will be available this spring, will effectively let developers bypass the app ecosystem entirely for their own apps. To be eligible, devs have to opt into new app store rules and pay for a fee for each user install after certain thresholds. So it's not going through an app store. It's going through something the developer wants.
Right. Which is interesting. I like that they still have to, agree to the rules and whatever, because you need to assure the quality of the apps, and they should still go through some sort of review to make sure they're not.
Yeah, this cannot be the wild, wild west like Android is.
Exactly. Like Android sometimes. But I think it is interesting to me because we've always had issues running tests on iOS devices versus like Android or Windows versus Apple. And this opens up potentially a way to get a custom battery test in or like a custom other sorts of screen testing features in. I'm intrigued. I don't know if he'll come over to the U.S. just yet. I don't know if that'll ever happen. I don't even know what the holdup might be, if only because it seems like EU has just way more aggressive regulations and, like, the, you know, the EU is just better at forcing these sorts of fairness things.
They are better. I mean, we talked last week, the EU fined Apple $2 billion for what it did with music apps. So, yeah, they are flexing some muscles there. And U.S. regulators are just like, we can't touch Apple.
U.S. regulators, I feel like they want to do to Apple and companies the size of Apple, sure, you know, what the EU has been able to do. But they are just like spinning up,
right? It's basically after Lena Khan came on, basically, like the FTC is all of a sudden like, OK, we're going to do stuff, you know, but it's like started. It's like trying to get up to highway speed from zero. There's a lot.
It they gotta go learn where Singapore is on the map before they come talk to us. That's all I gotta say.
Well, you know, yeah, that goes into what we were talking about before around TikTok, Sherlyn. Yes. We also saw the news that Airbnb is telling hosts to please stop filming their guests. And for the love of God, I wish this was more of a thing initially. So I had remembered that Airbnb said it was blocking hosts from using cameras in houses, but it's actually the current policies. They can use cameras in common rooms. I believe they have to like try to let people who are staying know, but they can't be in private areas like bedrooms and bathrooms. Now the new rules are saying no indoor cameras at all in rentals. And also you have to alert people if you have outdoor cameras. Hosts can also use like decibel monitors to see what's going on with noise levels, but they cannot record audio. So that's the other thing too.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because there's a lot of anger or discussion around the internet over Airbnbs versus hotels, right? And if you're crossing with Airbnb, the idea that it's more, it used to be that it's like people's homes that they rent out that they don't need. But now
or somebody is still there, you know, yeah.
Sure. And that, not very comfortable for a lot of people, yes, but sure, like it yes doesn't really matter to me. You know what you're getting into, right? Transparency is key. And I think the with this new rule, you're getting even closer to hotel region for Airbnbs, which is that like people who don't feel comfortable listing their own homes that they would want to keep an eye on as Airbnbs are less incentivized now. Like if you're going to like do this, you need to have some level of trust. And if you don't have that, then it's going to be really hard for you to run this like Airbnb business. You really need to have a second home. This is kind of what I've been seeing people say. You have a second home, that's what you rent out as an Airbnb, and that's where you like don't have indoor cameras. And I just don't understand if that logic is going to be any good. So I don't know. If anyone out there is an Airbnb host and this rule impacts you specifically, because I know I have an indoor camera at home. I'm the sort of paranoid person that needs to be aware of like what's going on in my home at any point. And so I would not be
I imagine
Airbnb
you watching
anymore
your indoor camera while you're home alone. Like, is anybody?
I have used it to spy on my partner when he's been around. So he's aware.
I hope he's aware.
I'll take a screenshot and send it to him and be like, get off my couch now.
Yeah, I see you taking the last coffee. This is a whole like conversation we need to have as a society about how we deal with indoor cameras. But how do you feel about Airbnbs versus hotels at this point, Sherlyn? Because I feel like it's location dependent. I've been a lot of great Airbnbs. I've been a lot of bad Airbnbs. I've been also in a lot of like good and bad hotels. But I feel like the baseline for a hotel is at least better because there are more reviews and there's more like stuff going on. There's more regulation they have to follow. Whereas, you know, it's kind of like, I don't know, is Airbnb really paying close attention to this host? I don't know what being a super host actually means. I still feel like there's more volatility there.
I agree with you. I think I tend to go more with hotels than Airbnbs, but you're right. It is location dependent because like I have an upcoming trip to rural America and the only available hotels just don't seem great. They're
what
like
is
motels.
Rural America to you, Sherlyn?
I don't want to give it away too much, okay, but this is a state that starts with the letter I and has a lot of farms. And we'll be going to farm country.
This will be the last we have seen of Sherlyn Low.
Yeah, I will be disappearing like and I'll become gone. A child of the corn. So,
well, you can find you easily, Sherlyn, because there's no like elevation there. It's just like all flat land.
Oh, good.
So we could see if you wander off, we could just like look over.
Oh, okay. You'll excellent. See you there are no cliffs away. For me to fall off.
There's nothing. Fantastic. There's nothing.
but yeah, in that situation, you know, instead of looking for a hotel, because again, either the hotels are full up, and then so therefore I had to look for Airbnbs, or they're just not kind of what I'm looking for, then I look at Airbnbs in nearby towns. You know, it's not ideal, I guess. And like, and as an Airbnb guest, right? Let's flip it. Do I feel like this new rule protects me? I guess I don't really have an issue with a camera, you know, in the place. Like,
yeah,
as long as
I feel like it's
clear,
a problem. Like, if you come out of the shower in like in a towel, sure, or something, it's easy to forget that you may be
I'm
monitored.
The sort of person, yeah, that would be like, as long as you tell me where the cameras are, I will put blockage things in front of it so that
I don't think they, I don't know if they tell you where the camera, like maybe.
Right. I think the rule is less around,
yeah,
an outright ban and more around transparency. But then again, that's harder to enforce, I guess. So
in other news, we also saw this piece that apparently Tesla has paid no federal income taxes over the last 5 years. But Tesla has managed to pay its executives $2.5 billion. Does that seem fair to you?
Over the last 5 years, let's be
over the last
so
5 years. But still,
so, like, that's
also
half a million.
Yeah.
Gone.
Also, Tesla received a tax rebate of $1 million in that time. Oh, that is...
Of how much? How much? A million?
$1 million. So, you know, very, very small amount compared to the billions it's been giving to executives. I feel like just this headline in deck is enough to, like, really trigger anybody who's not paying attention to like how broken our financial system is and how broken our tax system is. What a crock.
I also want to just shout out our homepage right now, because kudos to our team. Every like other Elon Musk related article has a picture of his face in various expressions on it, and it's got me giggling. But yes, it's paid executives $2.5 billion over 5 years, and it received $1 million in refunds.
Yeah.
That's wild. It earned $4.4 billion during those 5 years, and 2.5 of that amount went to its executives. That's like half.
I mean, listen, Trillin, how will Elon Musk keep his like standing up as he's not the richest person in the world anymore? He's now the second richest person, but he had a net worth of $208 billion at the start of March, according to Forbes. Tesla's not alone. Like they're talking about several companies that have done this. And this is just like Tesla's one of 35 companies that paid less federal income tax than they paid their top five executives during the past 5 years, according to this article by Sarah Fielding. I don't know. What are we doing over here? We don't have enough money to give public schools or to, you know, feed kids, but
I want to say this is not just like, you know, $2.5 billion to top executives. It's like top five executives. I'm like, if $2.5 billion went into his top 20 executives over 5 years, that's $500,000.
That's also too many executives.
Year.
Yeah.
It's too many executives. But like, I went with executives is a weird word, because if they were like C-suite or like, you know, whatever, then I'm like, oh, okay, you mean the top few people. But executives could be like a marketing executive. I don't think they mean that. But anyway, over like, it's only for five people in 5 years.
Including
that's like,
Elon Musk.
Anyway, hey, Devendra, if you had $500,000, do you think you would be set for life?
No, I would not be set for life. I would be in the process of starting to set myself up for life. But also, Sherlyn, now that I have two kids and just like dealing with like life stuff, I'm like, oh, that would be a really helpful thing. That would get me back to New York, right? But also, my adult self would be like, I got to invest a big chunk of that too to like start an engine for, you know, money for future kids and stuff. So no, that's not being set for life. Not at all.
Sure.
Yeah,
I feel as if I got $500,000, I would be set for life. But you're right, I might not be. Maybe if I invested it wisely, I would be. But
the way to be set for life is to have your money work for you, which is what rich people do. Sort of like not having to pay taxes. That's also really helpful. As you can see, like that helps you keep your pile of cash, like Smaug the dragon. Yes, that's what's happening here. Just disgusting. Just absolutely disgusting. Anyway. I'm very glad we talked about this stuff.
Yes, and keep your eyes open for these companies and what they're doing, I guess. I don't know what we can do about it other than as journalists cover it.
I mean, what we could do is like elect people who are like, we're going to tax the rich. We need to tax companies more, because Tesla, by the way, Tesla and Elon Musk's companies have gotten billions of dollars of federal funding too, of federal assistance to make themselves possible. So they're also government funded companies to a certain degree. But anyway, the Oscars were also this weekend, Trillin. Did you get to check it out?
I did. I didn't watch it live, but I watched it the night after on Hulu. And boy, oh boy, I was not expecting to cry, but I did. It's very moving. I think I really was, I don't know why, I don't know if this is the first year they're doing this where they would pull out like previous Oscar winners of that exact category and who had a connection maybe to each nominee to all, not only like list them, name them, describe them, but then also hand out the award. Which honestly, I was very moved with the, I think, Best Supporting Actress category where you had Jodie Foster was one of the nominees and you had, I can't remember if it was Jamie Lee Curtis that was on stage. I think so. Everyone was just like saying something and it was like, there was a personal thing. It felt meaningful. And I don't know why I just started to cry at that point. Aww. Maybe I was emotional. It was very touching.
Michelle Yeoh was up there too. Like that
Michelle Yeoh was for Best Actress.
That was great.
And Emma Stone won. And like, to be clear, I think Lily Gladstone was robbed, but
I think Lily Gladstone was absolutely robbed. So yeah.
But I think Emma Stone did great as well. I'm not saying
it's a great performance in Poor Things. I think Poor Things is a great movie. You can see it now on Disney Plus of all services. Yeah. You could see
it's on Hulu. Well, because Disney
Hulu
Plus
won, and Disney Plus. Yeah. But yeah, I do agree. I think the Lily Gladstone one was a better performance, but it was quiet and it was internal. And that is not
highlighted. It was so subtle, layered, deep.
So, the reason I bring up the Oscars, by the way, is that Apple TV Plus and Netflix, and I don't think anybody else, any other streaming services were really nominated, but they were all kind of shut out because Oppenheimer just kicked butt.
Everything.
Like all the way
down.
One Best Picture and Poor Things won a lot of awards too. But what really killed me, like not only was Lily Gladstone robbed, but Killers of the Flower Moon, the movie she was in, Martin Scorsese film, did not gain anything. Did not win any awards.
Not a single Oscar. Yeah.
And that's just...
That's wild.
That is just truly sad to me. Like, I
think
it was
a good
things,
movie.
It's a great...
But I think this year's competition was rough. I'm sorry. I keep cutting
rough.
You off. Go on.
It is rough. No, it's fine. It's fine. What did you think of Oppenheimer, Shirlin?
I haven't watched it yet.
You've watched many reality shows. Did you watch the one where everybody's naked? I'm sure you've watched that.
Yeah, Naked and Afraid.
Naked. No.
Oh, no. You're talking about Private Part, the one, the dangly bits. Anyway, Naked Attraction, I think that's what it is. Anyway, no, I was so proud of myself this year watching the Oscars because I actually have seen so many of the like finalists and the like movies that were in the running. And no, Oppenheimer, the one that won everything, I have yet to see. So yeah, that was very funny. I also haven't seen, and this was a choice. I didn't see the Korean one.
Past Lives.
Past Lives. I was like, Poor Things. No,
dude, how did you not see Past Lives? I told you to see Past Lives.
It's not my kind of thing. It's very drama romance heavy, and I'm not super into that. I know.
Yeah, I think there are certain things that you would relate to in that, but it's very good. It is.
I'm very glad I hear that.
See it last week.
But I really wanted to watch Anatomy of a Fall and The Zone of Interest, and I never got around to watching them ahead of the Oscars. But they're still on my list. But they did win a couple of awards too. So.
All great. Zone of Interest is one of those movies where you can't just watch it at home on your TV. Like if you do, put on headphones or something. But that is, it is such a unique movie where you just have to like kind of be there in the theater because it is slow and steady, but also the environment and being oppressed by the sound is like all part of it.
Oh, wow.
Tremendous films. Tremendous films all around. Shout out to Jonathan Glazer for being the only person who spoke up against the genocide happening in Gaza as well. Like, this is a whole Oscar ceremony. There was there was one award, I believe, Best Short Film to a project called No More War. And they also didn't say anything about that ongoing war. It's also very weird. Just kind of
there were a lot of there was one of the winners decided to dedicate their winning speech to awareness of the war in the Israel-Palestine conflict.
That's Jonathan Glazer. Yeah. So that's why he was the only one. He was the only one who really.
Yeah, he had a prepared speech and everything. And it was also interesting to me. It wasn't just that he was the only one. It was that his team also all agreed because everyone takes turns at the microphones when it's a team going up to receive an award. And his team, they all seemed to agree that this was the message they wanted to put out. And that really made sense.
There is follow-up coverage to Shirlin because the person behind him was a big financier, like a billionaire tied to Russia.
No.
And it's a whole thing. So that person probably did not want Jonathan Glazer to be having that whole speech.
That person probably shouldn't have taken the stage.
but he paid. He paid for a big chunk of the movie, so that's the whole thing.
Hey, but there was a big highlight at the Oscars. Mm-hmm. I'm Just Ken was really awesome, and also it was right after Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt took the stage to, I think, do
Fall sort Guy. Of
But they had a little bit ahead of their introduction of their, like, you know, tribute to the stunt industry. The two of them had a little like fake banter around, like, oh, you know, we can put this Barbenheimer thing to rest finally, right? And then, you know, Oppenheimer did better. That's what Emily Blunt said. And then Gosling was like, oh, yeah, y'all just rode on our coattails all summer. So it was like, yes, exactly.
They're really previewing their movie coming up. And that just premiered at South by the way. And apparently fantastic. Fall Guy by David Leitch. So great. Fantastic. I'm very glad that worked out for him because I think his last movie was Hobbs and Shaw. And that movie is not part of the Fast and Furious family to me. No, thank you.
Mm. I also wanted to just really quickly shout out American Fiction and Jeffrey Wright and Rustin, Coleman Domingo, all just, you know, didn't get awards. But I think, it was such a tough year to win anything. Everyone seemed really to bring their A game.
Well, go catch up on your Oscar movies, everybody. Anything you want to catch up us on that's happening around in Gadget, Sherlyn?
Yes. So this week we continue our anniversary coverage with Billy's story about 20 years of Bluetooth audio. It is on our site called From Mono to Mainstream. It's really interesting. I think think that Bluetooth is kind of a finicky platform sometimes, but we have come a long way.
Such a long way. Come on.
Very, very long
That's way. A great headline, too, because what we remember is the crappy old single-ear Bluetooth headsets, right? And now it's just like you get full, all pretty much uncompressed audio, or at least really good quality audio. Yeah.
Also, like, just all the other extra features, I think, like switching around, having multiple connections, all of that stuff, you know, I think is part of the development here, even if I wish it didn't drop off so much sometimes. I think, you know, we have like come very far. I also wanted to shout out, this seemed to be budget phone week, cheap phone week, because we saw Moto announce new Moto G devices this week, as well as Samsung brought a new mid-range Galaxy A55. And then coincidentally, at the same time, Sam published a new budget Android phones guide. So if you're in the Android ecosystem, you're looking for something that's less than $350. That's a very helpful guide with some of our favorite picks in there as well. So those are just some good stories around Engadget this week.
Cool. Thank you so much. We did get some feedback from some listeners too. Last week we had asked, I was asking if anybody was actually using Android apps on Windows now that that's ending. We got a great email from Irwin from Illinois who tells us that he's actually using something. I'm going to quote his email here. He says, I regularly use the Washington Post app to read the newspaper on my HP Spectre laptop. I enjoy the capability to be the print edition where the typography is superior to the web-based version. I make use of the touchscreen ability to easily enlarge the view and swipe around the page. And he says, yes, I'll still be able to read the paper using a browser, but the experience is inferior, end quote. That's a pretty good one. I've not spent time...
That is a cool feature, yeah.
Yeah, I can imagine it being good too, because I think the New York Times had a Windows app at some point too. So like the nice thing about Windows apps, especially for newspapers, is that they're pretty clean. You know, like, so it's mostly the articles, mostly the formatting. That's a good one. Thank you for that feedback, Irwin. And hopefully he'll be able to find something else that can do that. Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that this brings up too is that Android apps, you know, working on Windows isn't just a problem of Microsoft, but also the app's support of larger screens. And so like when an app is designed to make better use of a larger screen, the way maybe this Washington Post app has, say for an iPad or an Android tablet, then it works nice on a laptop touchscreen. So,
I think the problem does really come down to Microsoft. Like, it's a whole chicken and the egg thing. Like, if Microsoft makes it easier for developers to make good-looking, touchscreen-capable Windows apps, maybe more people will do that. And I think they've been trying to do that, and developers have been like, I don't know, here's a really basic-ass-looking looking thing compared to a very easy, a very simple iPad app, which looks and feels better as a touchscreen.
I was thinking more about like the Android app specific scenario. But yes, if Microsoft made Windows apps better to, you know.
This is also why the Android apps are here, because Microsoft was like, we need more apps. People aren't making apps for us, so let's just bring in Android apps, except those are not great apps. Anyway. Let's move on to what we're working on. And listen, I have had on my desk for the past month or two the Alienware QD OLED 32-inch 4K monitor, which is a very beautiful gaming monitor. It's the first 4K QD OLED from Alienware, and actually one of the first of these monitors at this size. It's also a 240 hertz thing. So I'm working on a review of this. I've just been so busy, and we've been going through so many changes, I have not had time to focus on it. So working on a review of this thing, it is a very good monitor. So expect something positive soon. What are you working on, Trillin?
Yeah, more behind the scenes stuff. A lot of digging into data I never really looked at before, which is really interesting for me. We're also, I don't know if we can tease this, Devendra, continuing to work on the podcast and its most popular features, maybe, and hopefully bringing that to people again.
I mean, the most popular one of the things is the stream that we've been talking about for a long time. So we'll see. We shall see.
We'll see. I know Devendra's actively looking into it, so. Keep, I know a lot of people hit me up and they're like, we missed this. Hopefully Devendra's efforts will pay off very soon. What else am I working on today? I have a root canal appointment this afternoon. You will not hear from me for a little
bit
after this.
You're working on recovering from a root canal. So
I am working on drugs. I'm working on having half my face be numb for the rest of today, and therefore my brain might shut off because it just is loopy as hell.
It is.
So there you go.
Whatever they give you, Sherlyn, like if they ask, do you want the, you know, you're going to take the anesthesia.
The good stuff.
Some dentists even ask, like, do you want to just like go to sleep? I don't know if they fully do that anymore, but the local anesthesia is pretty good now. Everybody send Sherlyn your well wishes, and everybody around Sherlyn finally gets a break for a day.
Hey!
You know? Yeah. Do we have any pop culture picks for the week, Sherlyn?
I have been, okay, so yesterday the Love is Blind finale, which is a reunion, it dropped, and I watched it, and it was actually one of the best reunions they've ever done. So if you've been sort of casually skirting around this, you know, I think it's worth looking at. I also watched the Oscars, and I do think it's a very heartwarming thing, even if it's like not, you know, an actual like pop culture thing. Yeah, it's like an award ceremony is a weird thing to recommend. I got a lot of like joy and emotions out of it. So I think it might be worth it. I will say the in memoriam section was too hard for me to actually watch and listen to because the song they chose was Conte Partiro. And it's a song that I sang with a friend before they got killed last year.
I'm sorry.
So finally, what I have been watching, and it's a lot more lighthearted, I think you'll be proud of me, Devendra. Mm-hmm. I finally started watching Schitt's Creek.
I don't even think I've recommended this, but it's a good show. Yeah.
It is a really interesting show. Okay, so maybe we've never talked about it on this podcast before. If we haven't, here is what it is. It's basically about this really rich family that fell from grace. Basically, they lost all their money because their business manager conned them, and then they had to move into this town called Schitt's Creek because the dad one time bought the town as a joke, as a gift for his son. And so they have to deal with that, understanding how to live life as non-rich people. I don't think they're actually poor in this situation. They do have help from the strangers in this town. But yeah, it's fun to watch them kind of grow. And it's like Dan and Eugene. Is it Levi?
Levy.
Dan and Eugene Levy co-wrote this, co-produced this. Their father and son team. Yeah. They're both That's really sweet. Good in this series. They're really good. I love Dan Levy a lot. Very, very good work and fun to watch. Just one of those shows that after you get to know the characters, you just put it on in the background. And I understand why they did a clean sweep of the Emmys in 2020. So that makes a lot of sense.
Gotcha. I'm glad you're watching that. It's a good feel-good show. Like, it's a very sweet show.
Needed.
The characters grow, and it's, like, smarter than your typical, like, sitcom at that level. So, very cool.
Exactly.
Good rec there, Sherlyn. I want to recommend something that I think our listeners would like, and also I think you'd appreciate, Sherlyn. It's The Gentlemen on Netflix.
Yes.
Guy Ritchie has brought he's not like remade the Gentleman film, which is 5 years old at this point. That one starred Matthew McConaughey. It's not like rebooting that movie, but it is like a sort of taking the world of The Gentleman and just putting it into a TV show format. It stars Theo James as I know you love him. I know from he was in White Lotus,
Divergent,
but also Divergent.
And the In-Betweeners.
I think you should watch this, Sherlyn, because Theo James is basically doing his James Bond tryout right now. Like, it is very much what he's doing here. Yeah.
He did that in Divergent. He also was in How It Ends, which I also watched because of him.
Yep.
So, yes.
I know, like, you're fully sold on him. I think he's not, he's actually one of the weaker parts of the show, but the show itself is overall fun. I'm a Guy Ritchie fan from way back. I loved Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I loved Snatch. I watched that DVD so much, it broke in my player in college. Like, if you were near me in college and we were just watching movies, I would, like, corral people into my room just to watch movies with me. So that was one we watched all the time. So this feels like Guy Ritchie going back home and doing like the fun kooky gangster stuff that he was always so good at. And it is just like a really easy watch. Cool people doing cool stuff in London. That's always fun. Also has the Guy Ritchie trope of like very strong, cool brunettes, which I think, yeah, that's always fun. I think you'd appreciate that, Sherlyn. Like, it's just a really fun show. It is well written. I think the acting, like, if it's well acted, it may get a little tiresome because it's like 8 episodes of like this Guy Ritchie energy. But also, I like that Guy Ritchie energy. That's just me personally.
It's a lot. I will say it is a lot. But yeah, I can take it. It comes in waves, I think.
It comes in waves. Like, sometimes it's really manic and crazy, and sometimes it's like very chill. And it's like cool British people doing having tea and doing cool crime stuff. Yeah.
What was that Brad Pitt movie he did?
Snatch.
Snatch. Okay, I saw that recently.
Not Fight Club, but yeah, Snatch is Snatch is such a good movie. But anyway, that was me in my early 20s, in late teens, actually, loving Snatch and Guy Ritchie stuff. So yeah, The Gentleman is good. Like, by against all odds, this sort of like redo of a movie that not many people liked and I thought was okay, is doing really well on Netflix. So check that out. I think it's a ton of fun.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our former managing editor, Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, Mastodon, Blue Sky, all over the place, and I podcast, but movies at The Filmcast at thefilmcast.com. We'll also be hosting Twit this week, so check that out at twit.tv.
If you want to send me your favorite things Singapore is known for, you can send them to me on X at Sherlyn Low, CHERLYNNLOW, or email me, CHERNNGadget.com. Hit me up on Threads at Sherlinstagram. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.